Happy Shabbat, everyone. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. You've got Kirk here with us. How are you, Kirk?
I'm doing good. Good evening.
Yeah. Haven't talked to you since earlier today.
Forever.
JB, are you on the mend?
Yeah, doing a lot better. Back to work.
Legs, back to work.
We're almost back to full strength. Arm's still, you know, healing, but that's going to take longer. But at least I'm not sitting around the house all day.
So you can, you're a one-armed bandit as you program computers and do technology installs?
Yeah, pretty much. I can kind of flop my hand up and use it to type at least. I can't really lift anything from the shoulder up, but I can bend the elbow. So I can bend it at the right angle, I can still type.
Okay, so it doesn't hurt when you're doing that, it's just that you can't lift.
Yeah, mostly just can't lift. So, I sit at the right angle, it doesn't hurt, and pain's gotten minimal. So,
you are not going to be the next Evel Knievel.
No. That is not something I desire at all.
My guess is that after you crashed that last bike, that Patty will never allow you to own another one.
Never in a long time, but as it stands.
You might want to take her advice this time.
Yeah, I think I would. Hello, Larry. How are you?
Yeah. Good. Had a great week. You feel good? Everything's good. Life's peachy. Okay.
Oh, good. Peachy. Yeah. Kirk, you said that you did not have a good day yesterday. Anything that...
No, I was just... I may have been a little tired of something. I noticed that every time you'd ask me something, I was like out to lunch. So I probably shouldn't have phoned in yesterday.
No, that's not.
Hey, Kirk, what else is new, huh?
Well, what else is new? Sometimes I can fool a couple of people. Some of the time, but not yesterday.
I thought you came up with a gym today.
Well,
you're right. For those that weren't listening to Shattering Myths today, that was our swan song, our Arrivederci, no more Shattering Myths. You were studying the... what more you could learn about the fact that Proverbs 6 said that the Torah is light.
Right.
And if the Torah is light, well, we have taken the time to evaluate all of the meanings of Torah based upon the words that are found in Torah.
Mm-hmm.
We've never just said explicitly that Torah contains the Hebrew word for light, but it does, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, and it's right in front of your face, and I looked everywhere but at the word Torah, and
it's right there.
Yes, so when he says the Torah is light, he's not kidding. The heart of the Torah is the Hebrew word for light.
Light.
Yep. So, you know, we learned a lot just on the realization, making the connections, if you will, because Proverbs 6 is explicit in its presentation of the set-apart spirit. The set-apart spirit, or spiritual mother, plays a leading role in the presentation of Proverbs 6. As a matter of fact, it is the Torah of your mother. So it says the Torah is light, and it's the Torah of your mother. So this connection that we have made over the last 3 days on the Shattering Myths show of equating the Torah to the set-apart spirit and saying the Torah and the set-apart spirit are one and the same. They are the same thing. They are the manifestation of Yahweh in our world, and both are light, and both are the spirit of Yahweh. And so that proverb makes it clear. It says that the Torah is light, and it says it's the Torah of our mother. So this is not an extrapolation. It's not an opinion. It's a statement of fact that the Torah is Yahweh's presence in our world. It is His light. It is the garment of light that the set-apart spirit wraps us in. The reason the set-apart spirit can do such a marvelous job of enlightening us and guiding us through the Torah is because she is the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that we come to know Yahweh through the Torah is because He is the Torah. And what we learned is that it's just as a photon of light does not represent an entire star, but the photon of light is the same essence of the star, that it is unchanged since it was set apart on its journey from the star. The Torah and the set-apart spirit are entirely Yahweh. They are absolutely, unequivocally Yahweh. They are just not the totality of Yahweh. But they are equal to, in the sense of the same as Yahweh. And so you want to meet Yahweh, you want to listen to him, you want to be enlightened by him, you want to be empowered by him, you want to be enriched by him, observe the Torah. And ultimately, the thing that is the transforming aspect of the Torah is incorporated it into the fabric of your life. The Proverbs 6 says, bring it into your heart, the Torah. So when we do that, we're bringing the set-apart spirit into our heart. We're bringing the Torah into our heart, and it becomes the essence of our guidance. It's the essence of our attitude. It's defines what we desire, what makes us happy. So it's extraordinarily profound. What the Torah, rather than being a set of laws that is of the flesh, is not only of the spirit, but it's the ultimate empowering and enriching thing. And it explains even how all five of the benefits of the covenant are manifest. Because once we are incorporate the Torah's light into our nature, once Yahweh wraps himself or it around us because of our accepting it, we become immortal because light is immortal. Light is...
Can I add one thing to that?
Sure.
You gave a list of things. Freedom, you know. What's more freeing, the Torah or the Magna Carta? You know, Take a shot at that.
Right. You know, when you're in the dark, you're really not free. Because when you're in the dark, you have no idea what direction you're going. You have no idea what might be in your way. You are likely to get injured. You can be hurt. You can be robbed. You can be assaulted. If you are injured, there's no one there to help you. Darkness is a limiting factor. You know, I play golf. I can't play when it gets dark because darkness is a limiting factor. Light is a freeing factor. We now, with light, we know where we're going. We can see where we're going. We can see the obstacles along the way. We can see the best path. We can do so safely. So in this concept of light and the Torah being liberating, light is liberating. So we not only have that equivalency, Larry, you're right, but the fact is that the first benefit of the Torah is to become immortal. And that process we've always known was based upon the transition into light. But here we have the fact that immersing ourselves in the Torah makes us immortal because the Torah is light. And the moment you transition to light, energy, spirit, you're immortal. Perfection is the next one. And we spent a lot of time on this today, but I think it's worth repeating, Kirk, is that, you know, light doesn't cover up darkness.
No.
Light isn't the opposite of darkness. Light obliterates darkness. Where there is light, there is no darkness. And so it's not that Yahweh sees us as perfect. It's that wrapped in his Torah, wrapped in his light, adorned by the set-apart spirit, we are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're washed in light, which means there is no darkness. Yahweh could not see any blemishes in Dod because Dod was enveloped in the Torah's light. He became Tzedak, vindicated and perfect, righteous, upright, right in this case. So, Larry, we talked on Thursday about our lack of enthusiasm for the concept of salvation because it's on the 1 to 10 scale of the benefits of the covenant, it barely registers a 1. In fact, it might be a 1 on a 100 to scale of the benefits of the Torah. But the Yahweh doesn't have to save us when we are transformed to light via Pesach and Matzah. When he uses his Torah's light to envelop us, there's no saving involved. You know, because what do we have to be saved from? We're perfect now. If you're perfect, you don't need to be vindicated. You don't need to be saved. We're made perfect just by being enveloped in the light. When we walk to the light, when we observe the Torah, when we accept the Torah, we, in essence, become perfect because we're illuminated by, every nook and cranny of our soul is illuminated by the Torah. And therefore, we're automatically perfect. Now, one of the things we also just hinted at today was that Paul's primary argument against the Torah was the Gnostic argument, that the Torah, because it was written and therefore was a set of facts that one could actually wrap them, you know, hold on to, and a written, inscribed text, and because its signature act was the sign of the covenant and circumcision was an act of the flesh, Paul condemned the Torah as being of the flesh and therefore evil. And he said that faith was of the Spirit. But in fact, if the Torah is light, the Torah cannot be of the flesh. The Torah must, by definition, from what Yahweh said, be of the Spirit.
Which is pure perfect.
It absolutely destroys Paul's argument against the Torah.
Well, you even go further than that, as you know. Everything that we set on, we look at, we write with, even our stabilized forms of light, right?
Yeah.
So, light is where it's at. I mean, that's where life is, you know. So,
all that matter is organized light. E equals MC squared. Light and matter are the same thing. It's not the same amount of the same thing. But, light is the source of life. It's the sort of enlightenment. It is what gives us vision. It's what enables us to observe our surroundings and respond. So
we're getting pretty good at relativity here.
Yeah.
We're becoming light scholars.
of light. But, when Yahweh began and said that, that he created light and that he is light, and everything that follows is related to light, including the greater light that would become visible during the fourth day as a sign of the Moed, of the meetings. Just as
the great symbols. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Right, yeah. Fulfilled the first four Moed in the fourth millennia of human history after being expelled from the garden. So it is light compounded by light, C squared from that perspective. So what's the third benefit of the covenant? We're adopted into the covenant family of Yahweh. To be adopted into Yahweh's family.
Like when they crossed the Red Sea.
Right, to be adopted into Yahweh's family as his covenant children, we have to become light. Because, when my wife and I gave birth to two sons, those sons are like us. They're flesh and blood. They look like us. They think like us. They are like us. But to be born into Yahweh's spiritual family, we have to become light, and we become light by enveloping ourselves in the Torah, by incorporating the Torah into our life, by being enlightened by the Torah. And the fourth and fifth benefits of the covenant are directly related to life. We are empowered. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the ultimate
empowerment. So we become light.
Yeah, you're from a physical, mortal, restricted entity. You receive the equivalent of the speed of light times the speed of light in terms of multiplication of your nature. That's the wa in Hebrew, means to add to increase, to cause to be more.
Yeah, that's the light in Yahweh's name. I mean, really? I mean,
yeah.
How do you take a wa out of there? I'll never get that, which is an O.
Yeah, which is also the defining term for the heart of light, because it's O-W-R. Or
sure.
It's pronounced because of the Tao the Wa. So it is
the
heart of the Hebrew concept of light is the Wa. And then to be enlightened and enriched is the next benefit of the covenant. And it's too, those things come by way of light. We are enlightened and enriched by what we learn when we're enlightened by way of the Torah's light. So it's all light. And so it's not just that with light we come to understand prophecy as future history, because on a photon of light and as light, Yah was able to see the past, the present, and the future at any time, at one time, at the same time, and therefore report back in our past what he has witnessed in our future without predestining us to do those things, but simply telling us this is what's going to happen. And because he can also intervene in time, he can tell us when he is going to arrive and what he's going to do and when he's going to do it. And so the whole story is played out on this the 6+1 scale that plays out over the 7,000 years of human history expelled from the garden. So light is an extraordinarily profound thing to equate the set-apart spirit to light set-apart from Yahweh. The Torah is Yahweh's light set-apart from him, equivalent to the set-apart spirit. And that Yahweh is light, we become light, the benefits of the covenant are all a derivative of the fact that the Torah and the spirit and Yahweh are light. So it was a worthwhile endeavor, and Kirk, of course, you found that light is in the heart of the Torah.
But it's amazing. The more you think about light, we've been talking about it all day, Tara and I, and it's just, and when you start to understand what the offer was to make you that, and what you can do with that, and how your life is so dramatically, I don't have words for it, changed.
Yeah.
And then you think how close, I think, and personally, how close I could have missed it. I wouldn't even know. I wouldn't even know what I was missing. This is incredible.
Yeah, you know what's amazing, too, is that when Abraham finally showed frustration with Yahweh,
mm-hmm.
and it was a time when he said, Yahweh kept on talking about what he was going to inherit through the
mm-hmm.
covenant, and he finally said, come on, I'm an old guy, and I don't have an heir. So you keep on talking to me about what I'm going to inherit with this covenant, and what good is an inheritance going to do for me? I'm, I'm nearing 100 years old, and I don't have anyone even to pass it on to. I can't even fathom why you keep talking about an inheritance. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yahweh explained what we're inheriting by way of the covenant when he took him to the spiritual realm and then showed him the light of stars. So it is so obvious what he's offering us and what it enables us to do, how it transforms us, how it empowers us, how it increases our capabilities.
Well, I mean, I like the idea of talking about dimensions. I mean, you're just going to another dimension. To be a being in an advanced dimension. It's wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think I really had a full appreciation of that until we began to really analyze, and Roy helped it a lot too, but we began to analyze how we, as a three-dimensional construct, can interact in a way in a two-dimensional construct.
Mm-hmm.
We can draw on a piece of paper. We can write words on a piece of paper. We can add colors to a piece of paper. We can fold the piece of paper. We can do all sorts of things to that two-dimensional construct. But we are infinitely superior to it.
Right.
I mean, there is nothing in that two-dimensional space that even approximates the capability and the abilities that we have, the power we have in three dimensions. And so as a three-dimensional construct, it is extraordinarily easy to create a two-dimensional construct. That's just why it is, since Yahweh exists beyond our three dimensions, it was extremely easy for him to create a construct in lesser dimensions. Now, in our world, we're actually in a six-dimensional construct. It's just that all we're able to understand is 3.5 dimensions of it. We're only able to maneuver very weakly and in a limited way in 2 to 3 of those dimensions. I mean, last time I tried to jump up, I didn't get very high or stay there very long. And while I can go off and did today and go fly my airplane and enjoy a little more three-dimensional attributes, you know, I wasn't up all that long, and it took a lot of engineering to get me even up that high for a period of time. We're basically a two-dimensional construct that has some limits in the third dimension, and we're stuck in the ordinary flow of time. But there are absolutely, unequivocally, more dimensions. You know, there's what scientists call dark matter, which is attractive, and dark energy, which is repulsive in nature. And so we know that there are at least six dimensions. And the and all likelihood,
there are mathematical equations that approve it, that prove it out.
Right, right. Yeah. And in all likelihood, there is, because the 3.5 dimensional, the 4-dimensional universe that we understand, its calculations are off by 95%.
Yeah, right. So we understand 4% of it or
right.
Whatever. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, that's right. So we're able to measure and quantify and analyze 4 to 5% of the universe, because 95% of the universe is in those two dimensions that are currently dark to us, one attractive, one repulsive in nature. Propulsive in the sense of propelling away from. If you took the same pole
of a magnet. Not in the pejorative.
Right, not a pejorative. Yeah.
That's the reason the universe is expanding.
Right, exactly. It's why the universe is expanding. It's also why, without something that pushes you away or that enables you to separate, how would we choose to walk away from human institutions? How would Yahweh be Kodesh, set apart? Being set apart requires something that repels. So repel is important, because you need to choose which side you want to be on. Who do you want to be with? What are you going to be opposed to? And, of course, the dark matter is attractive. Who are you going to be attracted to? Who are you going to approach? So the whole covenant idea is you walk away from one thing to walk to another. One you're attracted to, one you're repulsed from. But so Yahweh was clearly in the seventh dimension, able to interact in the lesser dimensions, but only in a diminished form.
Think how sad it is when people get a religious experience looking at a painting. I mean, I like paintings, but come on. I mean, this is not in a religious context. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, compared to...
Even more so as I think about it in those terms. I just go, idol worship is just beyond stupid.
You know, the closest thing that you could experience, besides reading the Torah, about the closest thing you could experience to Yahweh would be, ever go out on a really crisp fall or spring day, and a little breeze nearby, a body of water, could be a lovely stream or a lake, and there's and you're at an angle where you can see the light dancing off the waves or the ripples, and maybe it's you're up in the mountains and you're seeing the shimmer of the light off the pine needles. And that perhaps it's a day with white puffy clouds that are coming by, and the sun is creating lights and shadows and contrasts, and when you're
wait a minute, Yada, aren't you getting a little carried away here? The rest of us are sitting in offices all day.
and then when you're outside and you feel the warmth of the sun. yeah. on your skin. And, you know, just everything is clear and bright and stunningly beautiful. And that's light.
Mm-hmm.
What is one of the most beautiful things we can see with light? The rainbow.
Yeah.
You know, and here, who would have thought that the sign of the covenant, you know, you think, okay, it's the rainbow, so all it means is he's not going to flood the earth anymore. Okay, let's move on to the next story. Let's use the rainbow as we'll put it on our unicorns and we'll put it in the
world. Well, those are different, different wavelengths of light, for sure.
Right. I mean, right. So all of a sudden, you realize that the sign of the covenant that Yahweh shared with Noah is light broken into its seven primary colors. It's, you know, how many times did you learn, at least I did, maybe you guys are younger than I am, but it was always the colors of the rainbow were Roy G. Biv. Ever heard of Roy G. Biv?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so even you do, James. So, I mean, so when we're...
That's how I learned.
I haven't.
You never heard of
You're
Roy G. Biv?
You're a lot older than me, though. Help me out.
You've never... Okay, Roy G. Biv, if you ever went to an art class... they talk about the colors of the rainbow as Roy G. Biv. Roy,
okay.
R, red. O, orange. Roy is Y, yellow. The next color. And these are the colors as they go through the rainbow. The next
blue?
One is green. That's the G.
Oh, green. G. I thought it was B.
G.
I'm sorry.
G. And then Biv, blue. Indigo, and violet. So red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. How many colors are in the rainbow?
Seven. How weird is that? You know, I mean, that's another thing we need to put down.
Yeah, there's seven colors in the rainbow. Roy G. Biv. And most people, if you say Roy G. Biv and you talk about the rainbow that way and then you go through the colors, they will have heard of Roy G. Biv. They said, oh, yeah, right. Well, there are seven distinct colors in the rainbow.
And I thought he was an outlaw out west back in the day.
Oh,
right,
Roy G. Biv. Roy G. Biv. Do you ever use the term, or is it just too hokey?
We use a muscle scale, which is the primaries and secondaries and tertiaries. So it's not to break down to seven. Is how to interact and make all the earth tones too. So it's a different set of circumstances there when you're mixing muds and browns and grays and things. So
you just don't do a straight up rainbow.
Yeah. Well, I call these the rainbow colors, and these are the earth tone colors that when you mix them across, when you take a green, mix it with an orange, and of course you get a brown.
Right.
Things like that. So it's more of a practical term of mixing.
But you know that in a rainbow there is no brown.
Mm-hmm.
Even though yellow sits next to green, and there is no brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is no you've got no mixing really of the colors to get the earth tones in the rainbow.
No,
you've got it's a bright red, a bright orange, a bright yellow, a bright green, you know, a pure blue, an indigo, and a violet, and you don't have muddy tones.
No.
It really is. The rainbow is seven distinct colors. And I was telling you that these are the shades of light. My sign of the covenant is light. That's what he said.
Clear light.
And then, light broken down into the its composite colors. I mean, it's light broken down for you, so you can observe it and understand what it is that you're getting. Now, when we become light, it's, you know, we're not just going to all be white. You know, that's the beauty of it. It's a full spectrum, and the neat thing about light too is it is particle, and it is wave. It has the characteristics of particle and wave. And so the wave is what makes it energy. The particle is what makes it matter. So it is a stunning thing, this concept of light. And how, you know, when Yahweh created the universe and said, let there be light, at the point that there was light, time did not flow. There's no measure of time. Time only flows when light energy coalesces, what Roy would call the temperature of quark confinement. When it cools enough that quarks can be confined and light can be organized into matter. So, fascinating story of light. And when I was thinking about light and how Yahweh defined the sign of the covenant, and it's not, you know, so many people will tell you, well, there's lots of dispensations because there's lots of covenants. And they'll start and say, you know, there was the covenant of in the Garden of Eden. You know, there was a family relationship in the Garden of Eden, never called a covenant. And, you know, then there was the covenant, they'll say, of Noah, yeah. But the covenant with Noah is identical to the covenant with Abraham. Every aspect of it. You know, leave human institutions. Listen to and observe the instructions that I'm going to give you. Act upon them. If you follow my instructions, if you try to change my instructions, you're going to sink. And if you try to cling to and bring with you some religious people, or religious artifacts, or political individuals, or political artifacts, you're going to say, well, you know, I want a military to guard my ark. If you try to bring that stuff with you, just as in the regular covenant, you'll end up with being rejected. So they are the same covenant. And when Yosef fulfilled the Torah's promises in 33, which, by the way, now with light, we understand how Yahochanan spoke of him as light and spoke of him as the Word in the flesh. And we also understand how he appeared on the Mount of Transfiguration and how he will appear when he returns as a constellation of light and why no one recognized him when he emerged from Sheol and why all of the eyewitness accounts written by Dod and Yashaya and others about his enactment of Bukhurim have him becoming light.
Aren't you kind of awestruck sometimes when all the parts start to fall together like this? I mean, it's just, wow.
You know, when you start talking about the Torah equals light, the set apart spirit equals light, Yahweh equals light, Yahusha equals light, the sign of the covenant is light. The benefit of the covenant is we're transformed into light. All of the benefits of the covenant are delivered via light. And what light represents in terms of past, present, and future, and also in dimensions, we could talk about light for 10 hours and not grow weary of it.
No.
It's a fascinating subject.
Well, yeah. Didn't Einstein say that's what he would have done if he had the time? From that point on, he would have been the rest of his entire life, or a whole other lifetime if he could get it, just on studying light.
Yeah. Because he basically came up with the two principal theories that unlock what we need to know to understand who Yahweh is and what he's offering. One is E equals MC squared. E equals MC squared explains who Yahusha is, how he relates to Yahweh, why Yahweh showed the light of the stars to Abraham to enable him to be part, so that was the inheritance of the covenant, how Yahweh delivers prophecy without any form of predestination, how the set-apart spirit can enlighten us on the Torah, because the Torah is light, the set-apart spirit is light. I mean, the fact that light is the universal constant, the speed of light, part of what Einstein revealed. The other part is this transformation between energy and light that explains what happened on Bukhurim with Yosha, what will happen to us. And, I was reading before we actually began in Bereshit 6:1, but it was talking about Enosh. And when Yahweh took him, it says he vanished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's what's going to happen to us. I don't think when the Teruah harvest occurs, I don't think we're going to leave a body behind. I just think we're going to vanish.
That was always my take. It's standing grain. I mean, he clearly states it.
Right.
I mean, just like that. And there's a reason that he points that out. And I want to add here, you know, you got seven types of that red, that's a gamma ray. And the orange, that's an X-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And the yellow, those are UV rays. The green is just light. The blue is infrared. The indigo is microwave. And then the violet is radio wave. So those are your seven wavelengths there, too.
So we do have visible light is all of a very small spectrum of
very
light. Yeah, light in general goes all the way from, you know, the very, very big wavelengths to very, very small wavelengths. And so it is the same thing, essentially, as a radio wave, a gamma ray, an X-ray. You know, all of these things are forms of the spectrum of light.
Well, those are the seven we know of. I mean, it's astounding when you get into sevens, as you know.
Yeah.
That's a good topic you're into.
Everywhere.
I mean, like 77 words make up what they call the Ten Commandments. It's just, you know, on and on it goes, and you can show all these. I guess there's 100 ways to get people to look at the Torah. And I think that's possibly because Yahweh doesn't want to leave people without an excuse, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
You know, there's 100 ways to look at it, and they all line up. It's perfect.
And the more you grow, the closer you examine, the more you consider, the more you're enlightened by what he has to say. It's a constant growing experience. There is not a single occurrence where you can go through even the same material 101st time and you don't learn something new. So, you know, here we are just expanding on the notion of light. We knew when we translated the terms and conditions of the covenant, going through that for the first time, that the reason that Yahweh took Abraham to the light of the stars when he said, "What am I going to inherit?" was because we were being transformed into light. But we didn't know all this other reference to light was there at the same time.
That's how
you come to understand. You just make connections.
Well, I mean, how many times do you look at the Moed Mikra, the seven Moed Mikra? I mean, you go over them, you go over them, you go over them, and suddenly, you know, one day you ask me on the radio, "Larry, what do you think, why do you think the first four Moed Mikra were fulfilled?" And I said, "Well, they're spring, and then the fall is coincides with the fall of man," and that is true, but that's not really why. It's because all the work that needed to be done in order to transform us regular folks into beings of light to be with Yahweh were done in the spring. That's
right.
Why.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's got to fall upon
somebody. There's five benefits of the covenant. All five benefits of the covenant are enabled in the first four Moed Mikra.
Yeah.
So you have to have those four, otherwise you can't have the promises of the covenant fulfilled. Now, by the way, Larry, we're speaking of light. There are four of the seven Moed Mikra where we're specifically asked to answer the invitation and come into the presence of the Isha, the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light.
Which is light, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, here you want to... You want to talk about God being consistent on light? He took Abraham to the light. He's telling us on four of the seven Moed Mikra, answer the invitation and come into the presence of the spirit of the feminine manifestation of my light. He just equated in Proverbs 6. He says it's the Torah of your mother, and then he says the Torah is light. So if you already want to answer that invitation, you come into the presence of the set-apart spirit, which means you open up the Torah.
Why do you
what do you do on the invitation? Open the Torah.
You know, I know there's plenty of people that oppose the Torah. Plenty of people that use Yahweh's name that oppose the Torah, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But, why do you think it is they oppose the idea of the feminine manifestation of Yahweh? I mean, when it says it right there, Isha. Or it says Malacca, You know, I mean, how could this possibly be that people who claim to be well studied in the words of Yahweh miss this? And why are they so offended at the idea that there's feminine or nurturing attributes attributed towards Yahweh? Why do you suppose that is? I mean, we're not talking about sex organs here.
No. You know, you guys are all fun to be around. But, you know, personally, I like girls better. I really don't like
people over girls.
Yeah, I mean, I've always begun to wonder about these guys that are sitting around a campfire with a beer and they go, guys, it doesn't get any better than this. I'm like, what?
Well,
are you guys
girls? Do you think you're going to prove it?
Girls. Girls are good. I mean, girls are great. And so the fact that Yahweh has a, and there's a lot to girls other than just they come in a pretty package. There's a lot to girls that makes them special. I'm personally fond of the idea that not only does Yahweh have a feminine characteristic, he has a maternal aspect of his nature. I think it makes him more appealing. But beyond that, when we become like him, we aren't going to be strictly masculine or strictly feminine. We're going to have a little bit of both. I think the benefits of both be part of our nature. So, you know, we're not going to be sitting around the campfire as all a bunch of dudes.
I would think not.
No. But yeah, the role of the set apart spirit is huge in the Moed Mikre, where we're asked to come into the presence of the maternal manifestation of the light. And right here, Proverbs 6 explains what that means. That the Torah is of our mother, and that the Torah is light. And so specifically, on the four Moed Mikre, we come into the presence of Yahweh's light. So that's the answer. So here's the.
I mean, doesn't it say that it's the mother that it's the ruach feeds the nesama in man? Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Isn't that
yeah.
exactly what it says? And I think it's in Yob. Yeah.
So here we are in Bereshit, the Genesis 6:1. Indeed, it came to pass, Haya, that mankind, this would be man, Adam, defiled and profaned halal, treated with contempt and desecrated, dishonored, polluted, wounded, and invalidated the face of the earth. And increasingly, daughters were born to them. You know, the word for defile and profane, treat with contempt and desecrate, is halal. You know what Satan's name is?
Hmm. Yep, hello. Sure do.
Hello.
Halal Ben Shikar.
Right. Yep. Do you know in Islam what is considered good and nourishing?
Halal. Anything halal.
Yeah, yep. You go to a Islamic store, and the food being presented there is halal. So Islam, Satan is so in our face. So it's so obvious that Islam is demonic. Muhammad began it saying, "I've been demon possessed." He ended his life saying he was demon possessed. He was totally fixated on death. He did everything he could to abuse women, which is a sign that you're not coming into the presence of the set apart spirit. That's for sure. He not only demeaned women, but his whole fixation was on death. And so the fact that his God is Allahu Akbar, wants to be greater than the God of the Yahudim, therefore greater than Yahweh, and the fact that you also have his God spending all of his time in hell, in the Quran. And then, as obvious as all of that is, that Allah is Satan, you have the Quran tell us that which is good, according to Allah, is halal. because guess who he is? He is Halal. He is Halal bin Shakar. Well, when I first stumbled upon that, I was just dumbstruck by how arrogant Satan has to be to say that the highest, best, purest thing in the world was Halal, and that's Satan's name.
That's so in your face. I mean, it is in your face. It's like the Lord on Sunday. It's the same nonsense.
Right.
Whoa. In your face. The world is stupid. That's it.
It's like naming your religious text Bible, when Bible is the very thing that Yahweh asked us to walk away from, that it means with Baal. And Baal is the name and the title that Yahweh gave to Satan.
Can you do that translation real quick? It's Wah being with, right? Or
no,
Bob.
Yeah, Bob. The Hebrew preposition for with and in is Bob. And Bel is the Hebrew word for Lord. It can be pronounced Baal, and sometimes it's just Bel. That is not only the term for Lord, it is the specific name that Yahweh uses in describing the adversary, Satan. And as a matter of fact, in Yeshayah 14, as Yahweh is describing Satan as Allah, as the one that wants to be greater than Yahweh, he associates Satan with a specific place, Babel. Mm-hmm. And so it says that he is the ruler of Babel.
Bible.
And so here you've got with Baal, and what does the Hebrew word with Baal, Babel, what does it mean when the conjunction is actually defined as a word?
With the Lord?
No, that's the component parts. It means to confuse.
Okay.
To corrupt and to confuse. You know, Yahweh introduces it as the Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm.
The Tower of Babel. He confused.
Walk away from it. Get away from it.
Yeah, it told us that Abraham was in Ur of the Chaldeans. Chaldean is synonymous with Babylon, and Yahweh defines it as being synonymous. It says, walk away from Babel. And here the Christians are carrying around their Babel as the inerrant word of God. Well,
even worse,
their God
holy,
is with Baal.
The Holy Bible. Even they put the name of the other sun goddess, the consort to Saint Easter.
So should we, Larry, be surprised that since it's with Baal, with the Lord, that the name for the god in that Babel
is Lord? No, that's perfect.
That's perfect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely it's perfect in a very perverted and twisted demonic way.
Well, yeah, sure. It's like the Easter eggs. Demonically perfect. I mean, you couldn't do it.
Demonically perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is what mankind did. Mankind defiled and profaned, treated with contempt, desecrated and dishonored, polluted, wounded, and validated the face of the earth, the Adamah. And this is, by the way, Adam and Adamah. There's a connection there. And increasingly, daughters were born to them. Mankind, Adam, particularly those with a nephoma, had the ability to be vastly superior to the Homo sapiens that existed outside of the garden. So as Adam and Chawa and their son exited the garden with a nesalma, with a conscience, with the ability to reason, they were infinitely superior to the other humanoid animals out there, and so they could reproduce much more quickly, and that's what it means by the daughters were born to them.
Yeah, it's important to note, too, the use of Adam here as opposed to the other Hebrew words for man, like Enosh, mortal humankind. because when it comes to the flood, it's so much of a misunderstanding that this was about killing all humans.
No.
It was about killing the Adam, the descendants of Adam.
Correct. And as a matter of fact, what Yahweh said, just so that those with their eyes open would know that for fact, is that after he finishes the flood story, he says specifically that all men with a nephoma were wiped from the face of the earth. So it's not all Homo sapiens. It's not all ish individuals. It's not all Enosh mortal men. It was all Adam, descendants of Adam, with an Asama. He's very specific. Because it was, we used our ability to reason poorly. We used it to defile and to corrupt.
Where's that out? Which verse is that? I'm sorry. Which passage?
Well, we just began in Genesis 6:1. Barashit, Genesis 6:1.
No, I know we're there. Okay. All right.
All right. And we jumped to the end of the story because of what James had said, that Adam was chosen over many of the other Hebrew words for man, speaking of this was the focus on a specific man with a nesama. And I was just affirming that the Noah story ends with Yahweh telling us that it was only Adam with a nesama, men with a nesama that were removed. That's what the target was.
Any of them survived?
Could any of them
have survived?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they survived as well, but could they have survived?
Yes. So today, is it possible that there is a human without an nesama?
Yes.
I tell you what, in the world right now.
It's hard to say.
The majority of people have a fried nesama, a nesama that is no longer functioning. But how many, what percentage of people do not have a nesama today? It's hard to know. But I suspect the number is that there are some. And there are, I will tell you that the majority of people have either a dysfunctional nesama or a nesama that has been wired in reverse. So that, you know, when you're dealing with Muslim terrorists, you're dealing with the elitists that are so dishonest. In politics and in the military and that sort of thing. You're in intelligence.
The higher-ups of your Catholic Church?
The higher-ups of the Catholic Church, yeah. You're dealing with a nesama that is wired in reverse.
Completely corrupt.
Yeah, completely and totally perverted and corrupt. And I would say the majority of people have a dysfunctional nesama. They just don't use it. It's... you know, before I started my exercise regimen, I got pretty flabby, and if I tried to do something that would require any degree of effort, I tired because I didn't use my muscles. Now I exercise an hour a day. You know, I don't fatigue. You have to exercise your nesama for it to be functional.
Yeah, I need to do that myself.
Yeah.
The physical one.
So. Yeah, the sons of the Mighty One, the sons of Elohim, saw that the daughters of men were really beautiful. So they took any of them they chose and desired to be their wives, their women. So here we have something that is very often misconstrued primarily because of the Apocrypha and the Enoch writings.
These were angels marrying women. In the hell would angels be doing taking them as wives? I mean, if they were going to rape them?
That all stems from the Book of Enoch, which has been utterly disproven, but people still cling to.
The sons of the Mighty One are the descendants of Adam. They are,
of course.
The descendants of Adam.
Sure.
Yahweh created Adam to be his son.
Yeah, so the question to ask someone here is, at any other point in all of the Torah, Prophet, and Psalm, do we ever hear angels, quote-unquote angels, referred to as the sons of God?
Never.
Never?
But
they're
the children of Israel are the men. Yes, the sons of Israel, And you've got the first child of the covenant being a son of Abraham and Sarah. It is obvious that he's speaking of the sons of the Almighty. Initially were Adam, and then Adam and Chawa's descendants. This is who he's talking about here. And this idea that it was angels, Malak, is ridiculous. Even Yosha said that's ridiculous. Yeah, there's no marrying and sex in heaven. I mean, you're a spiritual being.
We're way beyond that at that point.
Yeah. We are way beyond that. There's going to be things that are a lot more fun. That's good.
I asked a woman who was a proponent of that story, by the way, why in the world do you think Malak would be doing that? She says, simple, for the sex. I just went, whoa. You're really not getting the offer here. It goes well beyond. Yahweh thought so much of it that, being in the physical body, being trapped in that kind of a matrix, that he allowed, the physical body to be ripped up and crucified. And later, when he's talking about it, he calls it the dead, disgusting body or something.
I'm not certain that, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I do not think a Malak can take physical form. Well, I understand that this transformation between light and energy, and I am certain, based upon Yosha's example, that we're going to have that capability in eternity. Yahweh uses the Malak as a tool, and therefore I'm not certain that Yahweh gave the Malak the ability to transform into a physical being. They're never presented as physical beings.
No, they're always presented as light.
They're always light.
Beings of light.
Right. Right. Yeah, Satan is never presented as a physical being, for example. So I don't think it is possible. At first, let me know they don't have sex. That's it. But
I think in Faust
he
was.
Pardon?
I think in Faust, the story of Faust, where Faust made the deal, I think he was a physical being there.
Yahweh transformed him into
Faust.
I think Brent pointed out, weren't there Malak that walked into Sodom?
There were Malak that went in, but the Hebrew word walk, we always think of as, that means to walk from our perspective, but it really doesn't mean always walk. It means
but it does describe them eating and sharing a meal with Abram.
Well, those were they weren't Malak. No, those were Ish.
Okay, true. It does.
Those were Ish individuals, and the individuals were Yosha and the set apart spirit manifest in a physical form. Yahweh can take a physical form. Yosha is a physical form of Yahweh. And so they used individual, not Malak, in that case.
Good point.
Unless Yahweh specifically limited the capacity, they would have the capacity. I don't know for certain that he did, but I do know for certain that this is not speaking of the Malak as the sons. No, the Malak or Shaba. Shaba is a command and control regime of spiritual envoys. And they saw that the daughters of men were really beautiful. Who are the daughters of men? We're talking about the fact that they could take as any that they desired. It's kind of as old as history itself. If you are vastly superior, and an Asama would make you vastly superior to others, you're going to prevail. You're going to not only attract women, but you're going to outsmart the other fellas as it relates to women. That's how this happened. And then Yahweh said, my spirit, my ruach, will not remain in, contend and plead with. Dun ba, abide, dwell, and live in, direct and vindicate mankind for an unlimited duration of time. Also, as a result of him being flesh, his days shall be 120 years. I don't think there's been anybody who's lived past 120 years, not in a very, very, I mean, it would be extraordinarily uncommon, even today. You know, somebody gets to 100, that's a major milestone. I think there's a couple of, you know, people that get up close to 120, but, you know, we decay. As flesh, we decay. Just nothing surprising there. But God is saying that his spirit isn't going to continue to plead with, to reach out to mankind forever. And, you know, we all have a very finite period of time that we have the opportunity to accept what Yahweh is offering. And that time is coming to a close. There's only 18 years left. And if you want to be on the right of a lifetime, then you only have, 11 years left. So, he is differentiating between spirit and flesh here. They are quite different. He didn't say the flesh is bad. He just said the flesh is mortal here. Never did say the flesh is bad here. He just said the flesh is mortal. So, he then says, indeed, relationally, the sons of God came to and pursued the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. These men were renowned for magnifying themselves, going off to war, and behaving as arrogant tyrants from the very beginning. So, what's changed? Okay, so these men were renowned for, this is Gibor, for magnifying themselves, going off to war, behaving as arrogant tigers, as powerful despots, from the very beginning. We started off that way. We haven't changed. The nature of man hasn't changed at all. God, that is the world as we witness it today.
What is it in our nature that flips like that?
Yeah, that causes us to be so arrogant, to be so vicious, to impose our will on other people, and to do so so arrogantly, to behave like tyrants.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? And, you know, you study the history of civilization, and what is it? The history of war. You take America, which is supposed to be, wants to present itself as a peaceful nation, and yet we've fought 101 wars in the first 400 years of our existence. One war every 4 years.
So you had naive I was. I came to California, and they're telling me they don't like Latinos. And I said, you don't like Latinos? I didn't know we didn't like Latinos. And then I came from the South. They don't like black people. I went, you know, if you're white or white, if you're black. And I mean, my God, maybe I was just too naive living around the different parts of the world. But geez.
You know, colors are wonderful.
Uh-huh.
I mean, colors are marvelous. If we were all the same shade, wouldn't that be boring?
Would be to me.
The richness of light is that it comes in various colors. We celebrate the differences in colors. Yeah.
But you can make when you're the elite and you're trying to put a spike in between everybody, you use race, you use religion, you use wealth. He's rich. Go get him. You know, it's like that. Yeah, it's always been like that.
Yeah.
Envy
is a powerful motivator. Yahweh saw that indeed the evil intent, the wickedness and the depravity, the ra'at, the misfortune and deprivation of mankind in the land was great in both magnitude and quantity, rab, the basis of rabbi. And his every inclination of his heart, his motivations and desires and ambitions of his heart and thoughts were bad, were immoral, were impugnant, all of the time. So it's, you look at Dode, and Dode did some bad things a lot of the time. You know, there's a lot of time where Dode's into mischief making, but this condition wasn't, well, Larry, you know, occasionally you probably engage in things that aren't ideal. This wasn't, you know, occasionally you
know, I'm the guy to throw stones at.
But this isn't, but all the time? No. Some of the time?
No.
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah, I fall off the wagon here and there. Yeah. Hey, can I say something about the next passage there when you're finished with it, please? Go ahead. I just want to say something.
Yahweh saw that indeed that man had an evil intent. I mean, that the very nature of our heart was evil, and evil in magnitude, evil in quantity, depravity. And when we talk about heart as it relates to our nature, it's the inclinations of our heart, the desires, the ambition, the motivations of our heart that matter. And in this case, God said that all of the inclinations of the thoughts of mankind were evil, were wicked, were repugnant, not some of the time, Cole, all of the time, every day. You know, so...
You're talking about an insane individual at that point, really.
This is a society.
I know.
And by the way, probably the most accurate translation of Kol Yom would not be all the time, but instead we're bad every day. Which doesn't mean that they were bad all the time, but they were bad every day. So every day, mankind's thoughts and the inclinations of our hearts, our motivations, were repugnant. So you wanted to make a comment before we go to the next statement?
Well, no, it's really, it's about that statement. And one of the things I want to point out in that next passage or that next statement is that if you noticed, Yahweh isn't angry with the Malach. Now, let me tell you,
no.
If a Malach came down here and tried to fool you or me the same way they tried to, without knowledge now, without our Torah knowledge, if a Malach came up to Yada, to James, to Kirk, to Larry, it wouldn't matter. If we were in that same boat, he would trick us because he's about a billion times smarter than we are. He'd have us standing on our heads, too. He wasn't mad at the Malach. This right here blows the book of Enosh out of the water. Mm-hmm. He was mad at people.
Correct.
And people being fooled by Malach, he would have been angry with the Malach. He would have dealt with the Malach, not with the people. That's all I wanted to say. If somebody can't figure that out, knowing Yahweh's nature, then they're a boob, and they need to go read the book of Enosh and make all kinds of stories up and run their life that way.
Yeah,
that's your point is valid. The context is the mother's milk of understanding. So somebody who wants to take a single word and misrepresent it and say that there were angels that were having sex with little girls, you read in context. God's not maligning the Malach. He's not saying, he didn't use the term Malach, and second of all, and he has a perfectly good word for it. He knows how to use the word. If it was Malach, he'd have said Malach. And second of all, why would he then go and say, man is repulsive? If it says that man's thoughts, the inclinations of man's were evil every day, he's not talking about the Malach being evil every day. It's man. So you're right. It's impossible to give it the angels or having sex.
You know, if the angels could do that, as brilliant as they are, they'd probably be out here having sex all day. They'd be able to take advantage any way they wanted to. They really could. I mean, they're that much more infinite and smarter than we are. They're the difference between the piece of paper and the person. You know, so, yeah, they could manipulate people. But he wasn't mad at Malach. He was mad at the people. That alone takes the book of Enoch and flushes it. That verse alone
destroys it. Yeah. It says, and Yahweh truly grieved, regretting that he had made Adam, mankind. Not the Moloch.
Yeah, not Moloch.
Adam, mankind.
Yep.
Along with the earth, his heart was emotionally distressed, filled with grief and sorrow. Now, do you think that was because that God didn't love enough that he failed with humankind?
No.
Paul wrote, no, love never fails. God was grieved. God was grieved.
He gave us free will. That was the center pole there in the garden. That was the... That was that was the center of the issue. That was the issue. The choice.
Yeah, and we chose poorly. And today, all but one in a million chooses poorly. And look how many people today are just violent, vile, vicious, perverted.
It's true. It's hard to fathom what some people do to others. I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
People that don't know, they'll say they don't. Those people don't have a soul. No, they just don't have any nesama left. And like you say,
the nesama is not
functional. Backwards.
Yeah, we systematically torture people, and nobody complains. You know, they say that about those people, but they don't say it about we, who have government tortures people down in Guantanamo or send them to Egypt to do it, or cowardly buggers.
Well, you know, while you're speaking to that, Kirk, you know, I know later we get into the fact that the Quran and the covenant writings couldn't be more different by I think it's 50,000 to 1 or 25,000 to 1.
Yeah.
But there's something even outside that, you know, in the Torah, Yahweh allowed people, since we're speaking about the military, the people that he had killed were within the land. He wanted the land free of all these, you know,
Hittites.
Right. He never authorized them to go outside the land
and
kill people. You know, there's another big difference, by the way. So, you know, the idea of going out and attacking others to drag them into your religion, whether it's Christianity or Islam or whatever the hell it is, wouldn't really matter because that's outside the Torah. You know,
right.
That's it.
Yeah, so here Yahweh is actually giving us the explanation of what he was asking Israel to do. And he wanted Israel to do it, even though he was going to enable them. And just walking around the town of Jericho was sufficient to bring it down. It's because the host of the most disgusting, reprehensible, malignant disease ever to inflict mankind is man. Religion doesn't exist outside of mankind. Animals are not.
Yeah, you don't have religious squirrels out there.
No.
That's for sure.
No, it's only man that's religious. And religion is the most poisonous, most malignant, most depraved thing that man has ever conceived. And so when Yahweh wanted to have his children come into his home, he would have been an unloving father if he said, oh, sure, come on in. By the way, it's infected with the bubonic plague, but come on in anyway. No, you rid the home of the rats that had caused the plague, and then you come in home. But and this is what Yahweh is saying here. He's saying that man was so despicable that the home that he had created, this planet Earth and the land, was so infected by this miserable creature and his religion and his wars and his patriotism and all that sort of thing. He said, I'm just going to clean house. I think that 8 people, by comparison to the number of people that were alive at that time, was probably the same as the 1 in a million that become members of the covenant.
Probably. 8, eternity in those 8 people.
Also, 8 people represents eternity.
Yeah, I'm trying to see the bigger picture, you know, all the time these days. So.
Yeah. What do you think?
That was a brilliant deduction on my part.
You are brilliant.
Well, you are brilliant.
You are the deducer in chief. You are tickled with yourself.
Hey, let me tell you, I know how to entertain myself over here. I really do.
But the fact of the matter is that you are correct that there were eight, and the reason there were eight is that eight represents eternity. Yahweh provided instructions that enabled Noah and his family, those eight people, to live forever based upon the this covenant that he established with them. And so, yes, it's an insight that Yahweh's instructions will enable any family to become immortal should we act upon them.
And that's why he starts out with a letter for inheritance.
Yeah,
the nun.
Yeah, Noah. Yeah, it's the sperm. So it's a child born with an inheritance. By the way, it's a child that doesn't stay as a child the whole time, because what's the last letter is a man standing.
So okay. Yeah. Noah.
Yeah, from a sperm
the
to Yeah. So then Yahweh truly grieved, regretting that he had made Adam along with the earth, and his heart was emotionally distressed with great grief and sorrow. So you want God to be grieved, you be religious. You go off and you be you join the military. You become vicious. And that'll grieve God. You want to make him happy? Walk away from those things. You want to make him sad? Engage in those things. By the way, you know, there was no comment here that the things that grieved God were homosexuality. There's no comment here that the thing that grieved God was promiscuity. You know, he didn't. He said they took women as their wives. He didn't say that was a bad thing to do.
No,
right.
Didn't even say it was
a bad thing to do. Right. Mm-hmm. It's their vicious behavior. It's their ego, their corruption and their perversion that he was angry with. It was their religion and their politics and their militarism that he was angry with. It wasn't all the things that Christians have a conniption fit over.
Yeah, not forgiving enough. That's enough.
Yeah.
I love that.
Way too sexual. You know, way too, you got to fight against homosexuality. You know,
yeah, everything is encapsulated in sexuality. I want to share this with you guys real quick. It's perfect. You know, I watch these ID investigative shows from time to time, and I watched one where a religious, I think it was a Pentecostal group. Anyway, this girl, basically, she's married to this guy, and then the brother comes to stay with them, and she pretty much doesn't want to be divorced, but she wants to be with the brother, and she tells him so. So basically, she leads him to kill his own brother. Okay? This was the crime. And they went to three different people from her church, and they all said, now, she didn't have sex with him, though. In other words, she talked the brother into murdering his own brother so they could be together, because she couldn't be a divorced woman, because that was beyond, you know, any worst thing that could ever happen. So they committed a murder, but she didn't have sex, though. I was floored. You've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me over here. But that's a true story. So I think that kind of encapsulates what you're talking about, the stupidity.
You're talking about a religion who takes, you know, the one of the 10 statements God etched in stone that says he will not forgive and interprets it to mean don't say God damn.
Yeah.
So, that religion, you can murder, lie, cheat, do all these other things still.
He's certainly murdering.
God damn, God will not forgive you.
I'm telling you that. But you know, by the way, did God say, you know, they accumulated great wealth, and I'm really envious because they accumulated great wealth. No, it wasn't. That wasn't part of his. It was distortions and corruptions. He didn't say, you know, they're way too industrious. No. His issues were religious and political and militaristic, and it's about our attitude and our ego that he was saddened by. It wasn't about sex or sexual orientation or promiscuity or any of those things, or being the one percenter, you know, of being successful in business or economically.
The way he points out is, he preyed upon, he plundered and spoiled.
Yeah.
He did the opposite of production.
Yeah. So Yahweh said, I will eliminate Ma'ah. I will obliterate and destroy, annihilate and exterminate. He didn't say I'm going to torture. He didn't say I'm going to punish. He just said I'm going to eliminate. It's his right to do so. You know, if you create a life form, and that life form is doing something that's counterproductive, like killing other members of that same life form, and besmirching you in the process, you know, you're within your rights to eliminate it. So, and Yahweh said, I will eliminate. I will wipe out. It's not permissible you say, I'm going to go torture that. I'm going to create a life form, then I'm going to go torture it. He didn't say that. He just said, I'm going to eliminate it. Annihilated, exterminated, terminated of the man from Adam again, whom relationally I have created. And that's essential. You know, we do not have the authorization to go off and eliminate and annihilate life. We didn't create it. He did create it. It's his. Very different. Whom I have created. Unless you can make that statement, I have created, then don't go off and kill.
When you get done with this, I've got a question in this passage, and I asked it before, but I'm going to ask it again, so please continue.
Because man has preyed upon, man has continuously plundered and spoiled living creatures who move about, and winged creatures who fly in the sky. Indeed, because I am grieved, regretting that I have made them. Yahweh doesn't have anything against us killing an animal for food. In fact, he gives us instructions on how to kill an animal for food, humanely, and to prepare it so that it's nourishing, and what we eat, what we shouldn't eat. Very explicit on what we should do. I have a farm here in Virginia. In fact, I'm sitting in Virginia today. And today, one of our employees was hunting and shot a deer, just as we drove into the property. He wasn't preying upon the deer.
Good.
He shot the deer because he and his wife and son eat venison. They consume the deer. They shot the deer. He shot the deer in a humane way. He immediately butchered the deer. He prepares the meat, and he feeds it to his family, and they consume the meat of the animal. God's got no issue with that, because he tells us how we should, you know, prepare the lamb, for example, and the things that we can eat. But when you go off, and a lot of people are into this. I'm not into this, and I don't mean to offend you if this is is something that you find fun. But when you go off and hunt just to kill, we had a guy that wanted to hunt our farm, and I swear he just loved to kill. I mean, if he could kill 50 deer a year, and then he was happy killing 50 deer a year. He wanted to go off and kill bear, and he wanted to go off on safaris and kill all sorts of trophy animals. Killing became fun for him. I think Yahweh loves life. And I don't think he likes it when we just go out and indiscriminately kill because we enjoy killing. There's something wrong with that.
Obviously. I mean, and even if I was to shoot a cardinal as an example, they mate for life, just like you're talking about. Mentioned with the
they mate for life. I'm just not going to do that. You know, you ought not kill for fun.
No, you shouldn't, and that's obvious. And I just, the winged creatures who fly, that was specific there.
Mm-hmm.
In the sky, and you know, he was telling us to be like that. I'm wondering if that isn't even, you know, the people that were trying to know Yahweh or share Yahweh's ideas or something, that I don't know. Maybe it was just as simple as birds. But
yeah, well, he's got two things here. They preyed upon living creatures. These are animals, behemoths, that move about. and then who creep and walk and swim and all four. So these are we preyed upon, plundered, spoiled. The animals that were in the oceans and on the earth walk, creep, swim, move about on all fours. And then the second thing is winged creatures who fly in the sky, and the sky is shamayim, which is the Hebrew word for heavens. So it could be just as simple as, it doesn't matter if it was in
water
or on the land
or
in the sky, they were killing everything. Or if you wanted to look at Rimas, as winged creatures who fly, as Ope, Shamaim in the sky, that they preyed upon the messengers and the message of Yahweh. You know, even the set apart spirit of Yahweh, that which has wings and flies, and doves, the symbol of the spirit. The fact that when the two Malach, gorgeous in their adornment of light, came into Sodom, the Sodomites wanted to prey on them.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, did you hear what happened yesterday? Speaking of Sodomites, the Match.com has a parent company, and that parent company went public, and the public offering was not very good. And it was because the CEO of Match was talking about all of his sexual conquests on an interview. He was supposed to have a quiet period with an IPO, and he violated the quiet period, and he was talking about his sexual triumphs. And he said, you know, that he even had supermodels that were trying to have sex with him. But he told the last supermodel that he preferred smarts over physical beauty. And he says, you know, there's a word from that, sodomize. There's a word for preferring intelligence over beauty, and it's called to sodomize. Guys reported insane during the IPO, and the stock plummeted.
Brilliant man right there.
Match.com. Yep, I just had to throw that out because I read that this morning. Indeed, because I am grieved, regretting that I have made them. But Noah found favor, kin, acceptance, compassion in Yahweh's eyes. So, Noah's obviously not with the rest of them. He's not out there killing for the fun of it. He's not out there being vicious. He doesn't have a gargantuan ego. He's not a tyrant. Noah was different, and therefore Yahweh saw Noah, and Noah found favorite. And what does Noah mean? Trustworthy guide.
Trustworthy guide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trustworthy guide. And it's really a trustworthy guide to a resting place. In other words, returning to the protected garden of great joy, the Gan Eden. And we had so little understanding of that until you realize that Sukkah is Yahweh's plan, the seven-step plan, the doorway of Pesach all the way to Sukkah. Sukkah represents returning to the garden. The millennial Shabbat, which is, 18 years away? It's a return to the garden. It's a return to Sukkah. Noah points the way. He's a guide that points the way towards returning to the garden. Sukkah is camping out with God. Camping out with God in the garden represents the universe. God's going to return and camp out with us for 1,000 years. And then for all eternity, we're going to camp out with him. So it's a good place to stop for this evening. We're out of our broadcast time. Yep. But if it's all right with you guys, I'd love to pick it up, and let's see how much more we can learn from the story of Noah.
It was very enlightening thus far.
Yeah.
You're off to the races, or any plans right now other than you're going to write some, and then we're all going to gather at some point?
Scott is going to set up the times, and what we were going to do is between the five of us, we'd find mutually convenient times, and that we would record say, an hour and a half to 2 hours at one time during the week, and then an hour and a half to 2 hours another time, and then we break it into segments. Richard has agreed to take those segments and label them and to post them on the Bless Yahweh site, and that's how most people listen to Shattering Myths now. And so we'll do it, except when a current event requires us to talk about the news, we'll do that. But otherwise, let's talk about the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. We will go between new things that are being written, like Proverbs 5, Proverbs 6, and old things, like here Noah.
Well, yeah, and constantly moving forward, obviously.
Right.
We learn things every week. And they might not all be earth-shattering, but we all learn things every week. And I promise you that there's nobody else in the world doing this that I'm aware of.
No.
I don't think so
either. I've looked.
Before y'all go, can I ask y'all one quick question?
Sure.
You know the story when Yosha is born and they have to run away from Herod and they flee to Egypt? Why did they go to Egypt? It seems so odd that you take your people out of Mizraim and then he goes there for safety.
Because the whole story of Yosha is foretold as a dress rehearsal in Yosef. And the
I know he went down there, so I thought it must be about that.
But they even took him back out of
Egypt. Okay, so it's just because of the...
Yeah, it's to parallel that whole story, so that if you look at that story, you'll see the what happens if somebody listens to Yahweh and acts upon it, and so the whole story.
But that's the only thing I could think of. If it was just like that, that would make sense. But it just seemed odd with me.
And then also the promise.
The prophecy.
The promise was to come out of Egypt. Yeah, the prophecy was there, but the prophecy is only there because Yahweh had decided that he was going to do this. And it's really interesting, I think, if I were to just speculate here, is that the children of Israel, to go into the promised land, had to be led out of Egypt. So Yosha himself came out of Egypt and then came into the promised land. But that the promised land, Israel, had become so corrupt that God himself wasn't welcome there.
And so
God went to the place that had been the most corrupt on earth because of the fact that Israel had become even more corrupt. Israel had become so hostile to God that he was not welcome. I think it tells you a lot about the conditions that.
No, you're right. That's quite a concept. But wow.
Israel becomes so antagonistic, so and much in opposition to Yahweh, that the egotistical Herod, the tyrant, to speak of the terms in the Noah. Wouldn't tolerate him. Wouldn't accept him. Wouldn't tolerate him and wanted to kill him. So that's why I think the story is there, is that it depicts the nature of Yisrael at the time of Yosha's arrival, which is why so few in Yisrael accepted him.
Yeah. I'm sure that's the answer. I mean, it has to be that. Couldn't be anything else. Yeah.
Well, there's a possibility that there's more things than that. Anyway, that's the thing that strikes me.
It'll jump out and say, "Hey, stupid! This is what it means."
Yeah. Every time I hear one of these Craig things, I'm like, I'm an idiot. Why do you see that? It's like,
no. It's
don't downplay what you do here. I mean, I can read that 100 times and I didn't even get it. Okay, so there it is.
It is fun to look at something. Okay, from Yahweh's perspective, why would he do this? There's the tie-in with the children of Israel and. And there's the tie-in, of course, with Yosef.
There was a prototype here.
Right, and there's a prototype here that Abraham's descendants went into Egypt, and then they were taken out of Egypt by the hand of Yahweh. So there is a prototype here. But, you know, beyond the prototype, can you imagine that Israel became so opposed to God that Egypt was a safe place?
That's astounding, but it's true. It is true. That's the thing about it. And you know, it gets, you know, sadly, you understand that most people all of them involved in Judaism today, of course, see Yahweh's Torah as their Torah, even though they don't follow that Torah.
Right.
Or observe that Torah. And they also think they're so arrogant, even to this day, they think they save themselves. It's astounding to me. It's astounding.
Wow.
They really believe
that.
Yeah. I've been in debates with them. I know.
Really?
Wow. Well, you know, I am actually quite pleased that we don't focus on salvation. I can tell you.
Well, did they write that out for me? I'm totally good. He's going to just change us to light. It's not about saving us. In that sense, that kind of knocks out every connotation I had. So that was terrific today.
Yeah. But I totally play a role in receiving the benefits of the covenant.
Yeah.
We do play a role. It's Noah was not spared from the flood because he did nothing. He had to listen to Yahweh, had to respect Yahweh, had to distance himself from humankind, and had to act and build the ark based upon Yahweh's instructions. So,
well, that's clear.
Had he not engaged, he would not have.
Drowned like everybody else.
Would not have had the result. He would drown like everybody else.
Right. That's clear. That's clear with Teruah, where he says, "Yet there'll still be people that are, you know, basically sharing my words and trumpeting my words." I mean, these are the trumpets, you know, for Teruah.
Yeah, we don't focus on salvation because salvation is just a boring topic.
It's a minimal view of a
relationship. It's ongoing. It's much more interesting.
Yes. Yeah, salvation is kind of a done thing. Okay, so you're saved. Now what?
Yeah.
Dummy.
Well, it's like you said, saved to what?
Saved to what? Yeah.
Well,
I think
I'd say, well, okay, I'm saved. Now what do I do?
Now what? Yeah. What are we going to do now? Well, what's next? Got to be something,
it's
right?
Boring. It's not interesting. Relationship. Right. Now that's interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, because it's always evolving. It's always growing. You're always learning.
Evolving.
You're always doing. Yeah. Yeah. Correct. All right. So, Kirk. And James and Larry, as we approach the end of December, we'll be talking about the timing of doing this, and we'll do a bunch of yada yada Shabbat shows between now and then. And I will be here next Friday, but the following Friday we're reenacting the same cruise and the same. Stays in the Caribbean that my wife and I did on our honeymoon 30 years ago. So I am taking 2 weeks off to enjoy.
Now, how brilliant is that? We're reenacting our honeymoon.
Yeah, same exact ship.
What a romance. You've got to be careful. Yeah, didn't you end up pregnant the first time?
Yeah, she's had I've had a vasectomy. She's had a hysterectomy. So, it probably won't happen this time. And I'm 60 years old. And she's just a couple of years younger, so it would be divine intervention at this point. But,
but you're still Mr. Romance. You're still
Mr. Romance.
You guys will probably go out. Yeah. You probably watch Chocolate again. I mean, really?
Oh yeah, I like that movie. Yeah,
I do too.
I would.
You and my wife.
I'll sit next to my wife and watch a movie. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I've suffered too, pal. Hey, you're not the only one. I've done it.
You know, I'm sitting next to my wife watching a movie. I'm not suffering. No.
Okay, well.
It don't matter how bad the movie is.
Doesn't matter how. I mean,
you guys are something special, man.
I know. I'm sorry we're screwing you up there. But we do, yeah. Happily married. What are you going to do?
Yep. No, I'm happily married, too. But that doesn't mean I enjoy, you know.
There's a limit on
Cameron Diaz.
I mean, come
on, man.
Hi, right, y'all. I'll see you next week.
All right. See you next week.
Take care of yourself.
Talk to you then.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye.